fantasy football today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
Your friends don't play fantasy? LOL. What a bunch of nerds.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Welcome to Wednesday's show. You're going to hear this one on Thursday. We're recording on Wednesday, April 5th. Hope everybody enjoyed the Rishard Matthews interview. Want to thank him again for coming on Fantasy Football Today. I'm Adam Azer. Hello, Dave Richard.
What's up, Adam?
Oh, you know, just enjoying some afternoon baseball, which I know you are as well.
Nope.
Hello.
I am not.
Jamie Eisenberg.
I'd rather punch myself in the eyes.
I was trying to say hello to Jamie.
It's a rough first week for fantasy baseball, buddy.
Why is it? Why?
Because we benched Patrick. Yeah. We benched Carlos Carrasco for Patrick Corbin.
Oh, Jesus. We're a minute into the show, yeah, and you're already naming names of people nobody cares.
Very frustrating.
Is Patrick Corbin related to Tyrone Corbin?
Yes.
This is very frustrating.
Yes, he is. So we're going to talk
Justin
about...
Justin Verlander lost his 2 starts. I mean, it's very frustrating.
We're going to talk about Jamie's breakout wide receivers and tight ends. Yesterday we talked about his breakout running backs and a couple of young quarterbacks, Dak Prescott and Jameis Winston. We got a report on Marshawn Lynch. We've got a report on LeGarrette Blount. Leonard Fournette is lighter on his feet. First, though, you know, we like to get good offenses in fantasy. Well, let's get a lot of Steelers. Let's get a lot of Patriots. I want to know a boom or bust offense this year, one that might really be great for fantasy owners or might sink you. Dave, what do you got as a boom or bust offense?
I think the New York Giants fit that description perfectly. They've got, on paper, a very good passing offense. You've got Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, Sterling Shepard. They've got a couple of tight ends that can contribute. Eli Manning, a quarterback, didn't have the best year last year, but can put some numbers up for sure. We've seen it before. Their run game needs help. They've got to add somebody to that mix with Paul Perkins and Shane Vereen. But I think that's an offense, and the offensive line has to do their part. But I think, Adam, and I'm not trying to butter you up, I think that could be one of the better offenses to buy into this season.
Well, Eli, you have 11th, Dave, and Jamie has Eli Manning 15th. It's a pretty big difference. Guys that Jamie has ahead of Eli Manning that Dave does not, Kirk Cousins, Marcus Mariota.
Wow, you have Manning over Cousins.
One spot.
Woo!
Well, you know, going into last year, I really thought that Eli Manning was a very safe quarterback. In 2015, he was, I think, 8th, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th overall, just behind Drew Brees, and he just had a terrible year. Okay, boomer, you say boom or bust. More likely to boom or more likely to bust?
I'm going to say boom. I think Eli's going in the right direction, and I don't think Brandon Marshall is as bad as his numbers were last year.
Jamie, what do you think? Boom or bust offense this year?
I'll tell you one offense that scares me a little bit is the Cardinals. Now, obviously, David Johnson is fantastic, but you have a quarterback and a number one wide receiver that essentially were in some way, shape, or form discussing retirement in the offseason. We think that there's a chance of John Brown bouncing back and being healthy, but we don't know. And J.J. Nelson's shown some good signs, but who knows if he can do it consistently. So Bruce Arians also had, you know, the health scare, and who knows where he's at. You know, that's not worth speculating on, but there are just some things that I think can go south in a hurry, and a lot of players that fantasy owners are going to draft, and understandably so, can maybe blow up in your face.
Well, does that mean David Johnson, is he the number three running back for you? Does that push him down?
No. He's still two. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I could see it happening.
Yeah, you're right. And it's a risky situation. And look, they were kind of bad last year. Johnson still ended up being the best running back in fantasy. But
he had to do so much. He was so involved as a receiver because the receiving corps was beat up. Look, Carson Palmer in the second half of the season, I don't think gets credit for the way that he played. He played really well. Obviously, Larry Fitzgerald played great in the beginning part of the season, and they had to sort of mix and match the receiving core when Brown got hurt or got sick and Michael Floyd, you know, was cut. So that's where J.J. Nelson stepped up, and Jermaine Gresham was very good for them. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, this was just a Carson Palmer injury from them just being awful.
Okay. We got a lot to get to. Let's get to it. Agree or disagree with a column written on CBSSports.com by CBSSports.com NFL writer Sean Wagner McGough. He says the Houston Texans need to sign Jay Cutler now that Tony Romo is no longer in play. Sign Jay Cutler, Houston. Agree or disagree?
Oh, yeah, that's going to solve their quarterback woes. I would disagree. I think Cutler's better than Tom Savage, but is he that much better than a rookie that's coming into the league? Yes. You're going to have to pay both of those guys the same amount of money.
I think so.
I think if they didn't have a first-round pick or if they really didn't like any quarterbacks that are in this year's draft class, then they do it.
And they might not like any of that. We talked about
that.
We don't know. Yeah.
We don't know if they like any of these guys.
Cutler was bad last year in five games. He had a career low completion percentage. He threw four touchdowns to five picks. But 2015, he wasn't great for fantasy, but 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, and completed 64.4% of his passes. I mean, I think that's a lot better than what you're going to get from Tom Savage. So, Jamie, agree or disagree? Texans need to get Jay Cutler.
Cutler had the quarterback whisper in 2015 with Adam Gase. I disagree, but I would like to see them get Colin Kaepernick. I think Kaepernick played really well last year, for coming back from, the shoulder surgery, learning a new system with Chip Kelly, had nothing around him. I mean, Torrey Smith and Quentin Patton, and think about the receiving core. He had Vance McDonald was in and out of the lineup. He had nothing, absolutely nothing around him. And this is a guy that he played well when he had good tutelage from, Harbaugh. I thought he played well last year, just not from necessarily a fantasy perspective, although he was decent. But I think Kaepernick would be a good solution for them, in a short-term situation.
Is this a team that has to consider PR things? And I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole very much, but PR things when it comes to their quarterback because of all the problems that they've had ever since Matt Schaub, became a shell of himself, that they kind of need to hit a home run with the next quarterback that they bring in.
Not if it's a one-year or two-year deal with Kaepernick.
But do the fans get that? I'm not looking at what happens off the field with Colin Kaepernick. I see what you see with
Colin
Kaepernick.
I think the fans would just like a winner. And so if they think that he could be a winner for them, look, they're not going to be happy if it's a huge money deal because that's what screwed them with Osweiler.
Right.
So if it's a...
If Kaepernick agrees, $6 million. That's what RG3 had last year.
Oh, I think that they would be thrilled with that. Why wouldn't you be? If you're looking at it as, forget about Tom Savage. Let's just say Tom Savage wins the job, much like, what's his name? The guy who beat, why am I blanking? Gabbert. Blaine Gabbert won the job in San Francisco last year. If Kaepernick's not the starter, or even Cutler, let's just say it's Cutler. But I think Kaepernick would be a better fit. If Savage is the starter, would you rather have Brandon Weeden or Colin Kaepernick as your backup at $6 million?
Kaepernick.
Of course. So, yeah. If I was a Texans fan, I'd be like, absolutely take a chance on one of those two guys.
I never really considered Kaepernick, but I'll tell you what, I think for the Texans, I would rather have Cutler personally because I just think Cutler's a better quarterback, but I think the best case for Kaepernick is he doesn't really throw interceptions, and Cutler certainly does, and with their defense, just don't turn the ball over. I mean, Kaepernick threw four picks last year. The most he's ever thrown in a season is 10. Granted, he's not, he's only had two seasons with more than 13 games played, but, maybe that's a good fit there. Just don't turn the ball over, play it safe. All right.
It's good coaching. It's very good coaching staff.
Yeah, and it's a good team, and as we mentioned, in a good division. Your news and notes before we talk about the breakout receivers in Jamie's Breakouts 1.0 column are Terrell Pryor, Sammy Watkins, Tyrell Williams, and J.J. Nelson. And we have talked a lot about Pryor and Watkins, so we'll probably focus mostly on Williams and Nelson. The tight ends are Cameron Brate and Hunter Henry. Hey, real quick, who do you like better, Cameron Brate or Hunter Henry?
Brate.
Brate.
Brate it is.
If Gates wasn't there, it would be Henry.
Injuries, news,
and
notes.
And in dynasty leagues, it's obviously Henry.
Yeah.
Is it? It's not like Brate's old.
No, but and I will say this. There's still a chance that the Bucs draft a tight end, too.
I hear your news and notes. Pat McAfee, a punter and a Barstool Sports contributor, reported that Marshawn Lynch is at Oakland's facility chatting with team officials, and now Schefter's got it, and NFL.com's got it. So, yeah, it's legit. And now I think is the expectation that Marshawn Lynch is going to be a Raider?
Schefter seemed to suggest that.
Yeah.
That according to a source, it was what was the exact? It will happen eventually.
What does he know?
Well,
no, just
look,
kidding.
This is a good move for the Raiders in terms of PR in Oakland because this is Oakland's, it's the homecoming kid. He grew up in Oakland, big fan of Oakland. probably wanted to be a Raider his whole life, and now he's going to get the chance to be one. It's just a matter of working out the details with the Seahawks and putting him back there.
You guys hate him, though.
I hate him. Yeah. It's not great for fantasy.
Do you remember the Twitter poll you did? We talked about it.
Yes.
What
yes.
was it?
I actually posted it on Twitter again today.
Oh.
As luck would have it. So the results were, it was a little more than half the people polled would take Marshawn Lynch in round 5 or earlier. 19% rounds 2 and 3. 34% rounds 4 and 5. So that's 53%.
Mm-hmm.
So of the 47% that wouldn't take him in rounds 5 or earlier, 27% would take him in round 6 or round 7, and I think that that's okay. And then 20% said round never, meaning they're just not going to take Marshawn Lynch because someone else will beat him to it in their draft. And it's funny because the responses that I've seen on Twitter to that poll, which is now 2.5 weeks old, they range wildly. Some people are saying, I'm not taking him. He's old. He didn't play last year. He stinks. And other people are saying, I'm taking him in the first round.
Yeah.
Like it is polarizing. There are people who will totally buy into this and take Marshawn Lynch very early because they think he's going to be very good in Oakland. And
yeah.
he's surrounded. He's in a great situation. You can't take it away from him. But how many times do you have to see an old running back do nothing? And
he's not that old, though. He's sort of retired young. And he only had one bad year. Lynch was a stalwart before that. I'm just making the case for him. By the way, when David gives the rounds out, we always base it on a 12-team league. Jamie, let me tell you the running backs that just went in round 5. I shouldn't say just, but in our most recent post-free agency mock draft, here are the running backs that went in round 5. Rob Kelly, Eddie Lacy, Paul Perkins, and LeGarrette Blount. Rob Kelly, Eddie Lacy, Paul Perkins, and LeGarrette Blount. Round 6 was Tevin Coleman, Frank Gore, Amir Abdullah, Adrian Peterson, Jonathan Stewart, Charles Sims, Bilal Powell, Jerick McKinnon, and Jeremy Hill. Round 6 was running back round. Where do you think Lynch fits in with guys like, Abdullah, Peterson, Jonathan Stewart, Sims, Powell, Jeremy Hill?
The guy's in round 6.
Yeah.
The only one in round 5 that I think he's comparable to is Blount, but we don't know Blount's situation. But the other 3 guys I think you named, Lacy, Perkins, and
Kelly.
Kelly I would take ahead of him without question.
Yeah.
And then probably Gore and Abdullah.
Are you going to play the I'll take his backup game with Oakland?
Oh, absolutely. And the only problem is that those two guys, I think, kind of cannibalize each other a little bit. But Jalen Richard was better than DeAndre Washington, and I think he'd be better than him again this year. So I would probably lean toward Richard.
How about David?
I would lean toward Richard as well.
Yeah.
he runs a very slow 40, but he knows his pizzas. And by the way, Marshawn turns 31 later this month and has over 2,000 career carries. Started to break down in 2015 with Seattle.
Yeah, the case I made for him, that's the second time I've used that phrase, the encouragement I gave regarding Marshawn Lynch and people who want to draft him is Adrian Peterson, when he missed a season, came back and just was just being refreshed at an older age from missing a season. Does the year off help Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah, but I think, just to say the same thing from that argument, Peterson was presumably, I can't imagine he wasn't because there was still thought that he was going to get back on the field, training and preparing to be an NFL player. Marshawn Lynch has been traveling the world. Not to say that he's in bad shape, but he hasn't exactly been in the mindset last year of I'm coming back to play. The perception of that.
Sorry, everybody. I just held in a sneeze there. If you were wondering what the hell that weird noise was, my bad. Okay, let's move on. Next report. Multiple reports are saying that New England is interested in bringing LeGarrette Blount back. Guess how many one-yard touchdown runs out of his 18 touchdowns. How many one-yard touchdown runs did LeGarrette Blount have?
I'm going to say 8. 12.
11. 11. I wonder what the record is. 11 one-yard touchdown runs. Wow.
He had, I think, almost all but one or two were from inside the 10.
Yeah, he had 3. He had a 41-yarder, a 13-yarder, and a 43-yarder. The other 15 were inside the 10. If Blount goes back to New England, who would you prefer, Blount or Lynch?
That's a good one.
I would take Blount.
I probably would take Lynch.
Wow.
Are we sure that Lynch is going to play a huge role.
No, but you kind of know what Blunt's role is going to be because you saw it at the end of the season when Deion Lewis was healthy.
I don't really want either of these roles.
Well, that would be the accurate answer. But I think you're looking at it from the standpoint of Blunt's probably going to score more touchdowns. But if he doesn't, Lynch should be better.
When did Deion Lewis come back? You know, off the top of your head?
It was late in the year. I could
say week 7, maybe?
I thought it was way later than that.
Well, I'm just going to give you the last 5 games of the year for Blunt. He had 18, 18, 17, 20, and 14 carries. So 17 or more in 4 of the last 5 games, regular season. I think he was minimalized a little bit in the playoffs.
I've got week 11 when Deion Lewis came back last year.
Even longer.
Yeah, and he had 19 carries. He had 17 carries in 5 of the 7 regular season games with Deion Lewis. It's weird. You don't see the Patriots commit to a running back like they did with LeGarrette Blount last year. It was surprising.
I think it's going to make their situation even more puzzling for fantasy owners because they already have 3 guys that can kind of all do the same thing. And Burkhead isn't too far off of LeGarrette Blount. He just really hasn't had the opportunities to do so.
Oh, he's very far off of LeGarrette Blount.
Well, no, I think he can be a physical runner like Blunt.
Maybe, but
I mean, we've seen it for like one game. I know, but I think that he could do it.
LeGarrette Blount was the number 6 running back in standard. I believe he was number 8 in PPR. He scored
all because of the touchdowns.
Yeah, he scored 18 touchdowns. He averaged 3.88 yards per carry, which was the worst of the top 10. Just slightly worse than Melvin Gordon. And by the way, 4 of the top 11 running backs averaged more than 5 yards per carry last year. Blount was under 4. And, you know, he was what he was. Now, 1-yard touchdown runs are going to hurt your yards per carry for sure. More news. Leonard Fournette weighed 12 pounds lighter at his pro day than he did at the combine. So, okay. Plenty of time to talk about the NFL draft. The Philadelphia Eagles acquired defensive tackle Timmy Jernigan from Baltimore while swapping 3rd-round picks. So the Ravens move up 25 spots in round 3. The Eagles get a defensive tackle. You know, the Eagles and the Giants could have very good defenses next year.
Eagles DST is one that gets underrated every year.
Yeah, but what about the implications for the, let's say, Redskins and Cowboys offenses facing those 2 teams 4 times?
I would take the Cowboys offensive line against the 85 Bears at this point. So I'm not worried about them.
No.
The Redskins, probably a little bit more concerning, but
yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how they are health-wise when they meet up the 2nd time around.
Okay. The Rams signed center John Sullivan, who used to play for Washington under Oy Vey McVay. And C.J. Anderson may not be ready for OTAs as he recovers from knee surgery. Is that big news?
No, they say he's going to be ready for training camp, so Vance Joseph kind of downplayed it.
Okay. Let's go to the breakouts. 4 breakout wide receivers for Jamie: Terrell Pryor, Sammy Watkins, Tyrell Williams, and J.J. Nelson, all subject to change as this is only version 1.0. Sammy Watkins, 2015, he was the number 14 wide receiver in fantasy. If he had played 16 games based on his pace in 13 games, he would have been number 7. We talked a lot about him. Terrell Pryor, I guess we could talk a little more about Terrell Pryor. He had 1,000 yards and 4 touchdowns on 139 targets. He was the number 21 wide receiver. And I guess the only downside is more mouths to feed in the Redskins offense, but clearly you got to like him better on Washington than Cleveland, right?
Yes.
You mean Kirk Cousins isn't an upgrade from Cody Kessler?
No.
And Josh McCown?
I don't know.
And RG3?
Jury's still out.
Kevin Hogan.
Do you see a star in Terrell Pryor?
I think he can get there.
I don't think he'll be of the upper echelon receivers, but I think he can be like the Emmanuel Sanders, Golden Tate, you know, those type of guys that are very good.
But
I think he can be better than that.
You just named 2 receivers. I don't think you were naming them as comparisons, but you know, maybe more like fantasy standings. But they are very different than Terrell Pryor, right?
Oh yeah, different for sure. But I don't see him. I don't see him becoming, you know, 1,500 and 10 touchdowns consistently. He may have a season like that, but I don't see him becoming a consistent dominant force. I mean, he's 27 years old. It's not like he's going to all of a sudden start to dramatically improve his career. He may be 1,208.
I think that that's what you should peg for him. Like, that's the target. Maybe a little less than 1,200. But I think he can score 8 touchdowns. This is an offense that supported 2,000-yard receivers last year, plus Jordan Reed when he was healthy. And Jamison Crowder also did his thing. Garcon's gone. DeSean Jackson's gone. Pryor isn't as fast as DeSean, but he's a lot bigger. He's bigger than Pierre Garcon, and he's faster than Garcon. He can work that outside, and when Washington gets in the red zone, he won't be the option. And that's what he was in Cleveland. He was the option, so defenses knew to double him. In Washington, they've got Crowder, they've got Reed, they've got the run game, and they've got Pryor. He's going to get single coverage a lot, and Cousins will throw to him a lot in the red zone. He's just got huge size on a lot of these DBs that he'll go up against.
Yeah.
I'm worried about the matchup against the Giants, sure, because their secondary is pretty good. But as much as we talk about Philadelphia and how their defense is coming around, their corners can't match up with him. I think Dallas could have a hard time matching up with him. So two-thirds of the games in his division are going to be in his favor. And I also think Washington's defense isn't as good as it was last season. So there could be plenty of times this year where Kirk Cousins has to play from behind. And Terrell Pryor would benefit from that.
Great addition with Zach Brown.
Yeah, Zach Brown was a good addition for them, but I don't think he makes the defense. I think Terrell Pryor has room to grow. And last year, the fact that he had over 1,000 yards in Cleveland with those crappy quarterbacks slinging poo at him, he's going to have a much better opportunity. And the targets are going to be much better.
Well, I don't know about that.
He's a guy that I will happily take in late round three. And that's high.
So if Terrell Pryor has 1,208, just saying, that would make him a top 10 wide receiver. Last year, Brandon Cooks had 1,173 and 8, and he was the number 9 wide receiver in fantasy. So 1,208 would be awesome. That'd be a great goal for Terrell Pryor. All right, the other two wide receivers, Tyrell Williams and J.J. Nelson. Let's go to Tyrell Williams. Williams was the number 13 wide receiver in fantasy last year, just behind friend of the program, Rishard Matthews, one fantasy point behind Rishard Matthews. Williams had 69 catches, 1,059 yards, and 7 touchdowns on 121 targets last year for the Chargers. He had 3 100-yard games. He had a stretch with a touchdown in 4 straight games. Question about Tyrell Williams. Are you worried that there are too many mouths to feed, and was his success last year a product of Keenan Allen being off the field?
I think 1,059 yards and 7 touchdowns is a definite byproduct of Keenan Allen not playing. 119 targets. I think it's going to be hard for him to get that many, but this is also an offense where Dontrell Inman last year had 97 targets, Travis Benjamin, 75 targets. I think there could be room for Tyrell Williams to still be very productive as a number 3 fantasy receiver, even though he won't get the same big number of targets. I also don't think Antonio Gates is going to get 93 targets, which is what he had last year. So Keenan Allen's going to get 10 a game. That's 160 over the course of a season. That's if he plays the whole season. That's a big if. And if he's out, then you know that Tyrell Williams is going to cash in. So yeah. I think the floor for Tyrell Williams is right around 800 yards and 7 touchdowns like he had last year. I think he can get maybe 6 instead of 7. But I think he's got a big ceiling, and it's not necessarily dependent on him. Because if Keenan Allen gets banged up and misses time again, or if any other key factor in that offense gets banged up and misses time again, Tyrell could take off.
And Jamie, you think that he could be better than Keenan Allen?
I wouldn't be surprised. I just think that he's a good player, you know. And I think if he didn't have the shoulder injury toward the end of the season, his numbers would have been even better than how he finished. I just think he'll back it up. It's not necessarily saying he's going to be better, because 13th best fantasy receiver is kind of hard to top for him in this offense if everybody's healthy. But I just think he'll play better. He's entering his third year, you know. I think that'll help him. I think there's a rapport now with Rivers, so he doesn't have to depend on, you know, just Keenan Allen and maybe just his tight end situation. And so I think you'll get a full season of Tyrell Williams playing at what should be a high level in an offense that I think is going to be fun to watch. You know, we talk about they're not necessarily an underrated offense or out of nowhere offense, but they're going to be a great offense. And so he's just somebody that I'm excited to put on my fantasy team. And if Keenan Allen does get hurt, which I don't think anybody wants to see, then you see what the capability is of him to maybe take his game to an even higher level.
Well, how would you describe Keenan Allen's game? Like, what is he best at in that offense?
Oh, I think he's best at, you know, the short area routes and being a good
mid-range
target.
Stuff too. Yep. Sure. I think he can run any route inside of 15 yards, no problem.
I think he can run any route on the field, but what he's best at is probably just being, you know, over the middle, mid-range type of receiver.
I think Tyrell Williams is a little bit more of a deep threat, and I think he's got the size to contribute in third and seven situations, and maybe even in the red zone too. I think this is going to sound a little crazy, especially everybody that likes Keenan Allen. I think there's a higher ceiling for Tyrell Williams. If both of these guys had the same amount of targets, I think Tyrell Williams could put up better numbers than Keenan Allen. I don't think that'll happen unless Keenan Allen gets hurt.
Okay. Would you rather have Tyrell Williams or Larry Fitzgerald?
Williams.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Tyrell Williams or Kelvin Benjamin?
I've got Benjamin ranked higher. I've started working on him for the magazine. You know, we write blurbs on every player for the magazine. And while there's all sorts of positive talk about how he, you know, got banged up earlier in the year and it took him a while to really round into shape, and by the end of the year he was in good shape and he's going to have his first good offseason now, he kind of makes me nervous. And I know he'll get picked before Tyrell Williams in pretty much every single draft.
I have them, I think, six spots apart with Benjamin at 25 and Williams in like 30, 31.
There could come a point where I put Williams ahead of Benjamin.
Yeah, I'm not going to get there unless Keenan Allen's hurt before the start of the season. But Benjamin's interesting because of the loss of Ted Ginn. You know, so what you saw in 2014 with Ted Ginn not there, hopefully that's, you know, something that carries over to the season.
All right, next wide receiver, J.J. Nelson. He caught a touchdown in four of his last five games. He caught six touchdowns on the season, averaged 16.7 yards per catch. And this was a guy that, you know, doesn't really get a lot of targets, but when he does, he really cashes in. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but it's like every time he got six or more targets, pretty much.
Seven or more targets.
He had a good game. He had at least eight fantasy points. Is that right?
Yep.
Every time he had seven or more targets in standard scoring leagues. And sometimes he had like huge numbers. So I know Jamie's liked J.J. Nelson for a while. Dave, do you like J.J. Nelson as a breakout this year?
I like him. I don't know if he's got a chance to be 1,000 yards and seven touchdowns. I like the skill set. I can't stand the catch rate. He seems to be very much a boom or bust type of receiver, although toward the end of the year, if I recall, he was used in a variety of ways in that offense. He just got some good opportunities there. And maybe that's what the focus should be on, is that the opportunity for him will be much better with Michael Floyd out of the picture, John Brown a question mark. I think J.J. Nelson, even though he's very, very lean to play pro football, he's not a big guy. He's super skinny, but he is super fast. And I think Arizona will try and find ways to capitalize on that. But I think that could make for a lot of up and down weeks in fantasy, where one week he's one catch, 25 yards on six targets. And the next week it's five targets, but he catches two balls for 75 yards and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be very up or down, the type of receiver that you'll draft hoping that you start him on the right weeks. And you're not going to know exactly when those right weeks will be.
He's in the perfect offense for his skill set, because of his coach, because of his quarterback, because of the role he's going to play. His playing time is going to increase because of no Michael Floyd. If John Brown's not ready, that'll only help him out even more. Larry Fitzgerald is clearly not going to continue to run downfield routes. That's just not his role with the team anymore and how the Cardinals want to use him. So I think J.J. Nelson, of the four guys that I wrote about, has the highest ceiling of them.
Whoa!
Maybe not as much as Sammy Watkins, because think about where these guys have to go. We just talked about Terrell Pryor getting 200 more yards and three or four more touchdowns. That's realistic. Tyrell Williams, is he going to get better than 1,007? You know, it's hard to say. Sammy Watkins and Nelson are coming from a place. You know, Watkins, you saw it a little bit. You know, you mentioned it, Adam. You know, if you project his numbers over 13 games, what he could have been. J.J. Nelson, if you take the sample size of what he was last year and you put that over 16 games, you know, there's a chance of him having a monster season. So just in terms of ceiling, he has a very high ceiling. I don't know if he'll get there, but I think he has a very high ceiling.
That's kind of a shocking comment, that he has the highest ceiling of the four. Terrell Pryor, Sammy Watkins, Tyrell Williams.
Maybe saying the highest ceiling is not the right way to phrase it, but maybe the most room to grow.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
I probably explained it more so than the phrasing, but I just think where he can get to in this offense. The problem is, and I think this is where, you know, especially our show, is we've talked about this role before, you know, in some way, shape, or form. You know, we were kind of, the three of us were excited about Michael Floyd last year, and it clearly didn't materialize.
Not me.
No, not you at all. Sorry. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But, you know, this is just it's an offense that, you know, and I know I'm saying this after saying that I think this could be an offense that flops, but if everything works right, this is what this guy could be. You know, could be what Michael Floyd was, could be what he showed last year in spurts, could be what he's shown when he's gotten the target. So there's just a lot to like about J.J. Nelson playing for the Cardinals, but there's also the downfall. You know, Dave alluded to it. There could be some boom or bust weeks, and he still plays in a division that has, you know, played Seattle twice. And the Rams defense is going to get better with Wade Phillips. So, you know, there should be some trepidation, and it's why I have him ranked where I do. You know, if I really thought that this was going to be a guaranteed situation, he wouldn't be around 30 for me. He'd be closer to 20.
All right. So let's move to the tight ends here, and we'll talk about, Cameron Brate and Hunter Henry. Cameron Brate was the number 6 tight end in fantasy and standard scoring leagues last year. Hunter Henry was the number 10. Tight end in fantasy, and he only had 54 targets. That's crazy. And actually, Brate didn't really have that many targets either. He had 81. Like Zach Ertz had 107 targets. Antonio Gates had 92. Both these guys found the end zone 8 times last year. Brate had 660 yards. Henry had 478 yards. And Brate had more catches. He had 57 catches. Hunter Henry only had 36. You don't see rookie tight ends really do what Hunter Henry did. He was great. We usually ignore rookie tight ends. It usually takes them a little time to. Even David Njoku is going to need some adjusting, I think. Why Cameron Brate over Hunter Henry in 2017, guys?
I think it's just the presence of Gates. At least for me, it's the presence of Gates. If Gates wasn't there, then Henry's going to get all the red zone targets. He's going to get, you know, most of the tight end production. You have Keenan Allen coming back. You have the the growth of Tyrell Williams. So there's just a lot of mouths to feed there for a guy in Rivers who is going to lean on guys that he, you know, likes. He's not going to just go away from Gates. He's not going to just go away from Allen and Williams. So Henry just has a few more mouths to deal with compared to Brate, who only has to, you know, contend with two very good players in Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson. But they're close. I mean, they both have a world of potential and a world of production in front of them. It's just a matter of who will deliver more. For me, I think Brate will get there in the offense he's going to play in with the quarterback he plays in. Jameis Winston's got such a great track record of leaning on his tight ends. Not that Phillip Rivers does not, clearly, but I just fear Gates taking away just a little bit from Hunter Henry. That's going to ruin him to a certain degree.
Tight end on a team that uses one tight end most of the time. Tight end on a team that uses two tight ends a lot of the time. Common sense would tell you to lean toward the tight end that's on the team that'll use one tight end most of the time. That's okay. Cameron Brate.
Now, if the Bucks do, you know, they're in the range of O.J. Howard and Njoku, you could see them making that type of play, just based on the upside of those two guys and what they bring, and then they'll be a more two tight end set because they're not going to take Brate off the field all the time, but that would impact him tremendously if that happened.
Okay. Man, I guess I really want a lot of Hunter Henry. Like I have a crush on Hunter Henry. I get what you're saying. I really don't take Antonio Gates seriously at this point. Like, it seems like they know what the deal is. He's coming back knowing he's the number 2 tight end. That was sort of my interpretation of it. I'm all about
it. Yeah, but I think that is something in theory that's great. But, you know, third down in the red zone, there's a, you know, touchdown needed to win or tie the game or bring them within contention. Not that Hunter Henry's going to be, you know, one of the primary go-to guys for Phillip Rivers, but, you know, I mean, Gates is the leader in touchdowns for tight ends, or he's one away from breaking the record. You know, that's a guy that's proven. So it's just going to be something that takes away a little bit, you know, and you're talking about guys, I think once you get past, you know, the Gronks, the Reeds, the Kelseys, and you're looking at the upside guys where these two guys kind of fall in, it's you're nitpicking a little bit here. Yeah. And, you know, like Dave said, there's one team that's going to have two tight ends, one team that's going to have one team that has, you know, I think a scenario of, you know, just slightly favors one, slightly favors the other. I you know, if this was flip them, put Brate in San Diego or at Los Angeles and put Henry in Tampa Bay, Henry's the better of the two.
Do you find tight ends difficult to predict breakouts from? Because it is a very touchdown-dependent position. They're not typically going to get a lot of yards. I feel like if you're going to look for a breakout at tight end, should you maybe try to find someone who has a chance to get close to 1,000 yards, which would be just enormous for a tight end, like Kelsey did last year?
It's difficult. I think you're looking at offense. You know, we were kind of right about Jimmy Graham, you know, just based on how he was trending from where he was drafted and the things that Gruden said about him when he had a chance to look at him, to what Peyton said about him when he got a chance to be there. We clearly we missed, you know, with the same situation with Kobe Fleener, but these two guys, I think, you know, you're looking at offenses that favor that position and quarterbacks that favor that position. So that's what you're kind of hoping for.
I think you look for that. I think you also look for guys that just have a unique skill set to them, whether it's a size issue like Gronkowski or a speed issue like Jimmy Graham, just something that makes them different than your average tight end. Mm-hmm. And like Greg Olsen's really good at everything he does. I don't think that he's necessarily got a unique skill set about him, but his quarterback knows he's reliable and he's in an offense that doesn't have a lot of threats in the passing game. So he's going to continue to rack up numbers. I think if you don't see those type of unique qualities from a tight end, or he's not in an offense that can tailor to a tight end, you don't even think about him unless it's with a late round pick.
I'll give you one of my favorite sleepers, which we'll talk about another time, is Tyler Higbee. And this is a guy that has a good track record in college, former wide receiver. And he's getting a coach now in Sean McVay who leans on his tight ends. And you know, we talk about an offense that needs players. I mean, I don't think Tavon Austin and Robert Woods are scaring a lot of people. And so you look at what McVay did in Washington and the numbers that his tight ends produced. Obviously, a lot of that was Jordan Reed, and it's not fair to say that Tyler Higbee can play like Jordan Reed, at least not now. But that offense, I believe, over the last 2 years, has the number one tight end production from their group. You know, Vernon Davis was a part of that. Niles Paul was a part of that. You know, there's just a lot of guys there. But this is a situation. I didn't really get a chance to write about it. Maybe I will at some point. But I asked McVay about Higbee, and he was glowing. And so it's just one of those situations where, you know, between him and Austin Hooper, you know, Adam, you kind of alluded to it, you know, rookie tight ends, we don't really see it. And there were three guys last year, Henry, Hooper, and Higbee, the Triple H of tight ends.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, Hooper had the big play in the Super Bowl, and he had some moments during the year when he had, you know, the targets were up. I think he's another one that's a sleeper, you know. So these are two guys in terms of Higbee and Hooper. I like Higbee better. But there's a chance that once you get past the tight end that you like, or in some cases when teams take two tight ends in your fantasy league, those are guys you just start out the season streaming and see how it goes. And if you don't like them, then you move on to the unfortunate situation of the Charles Clays of the world.
Well, let's read some emails, huh? fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. And this one's from Brandon. And Brandon wanted to write about that wide receiver strategy we've been talking about, the Azar strategy. But Brandon spelled it the A-Z-A-R strategy.
Azar.
The Azar strategy. And he said,
like Hank Azaria.
And you remember the whole thing was based on Cooper and Crabtree last year. He said, I drafted both Cooper and Crabtree and took last place. This strategy sucks. Well,
and that's the end of the email.
If you're going to spell the strategy wrong, of course it's not going to work for you. It's A-I-Z-E-R, Brandon. So come on now. Here's an email from Sam. Hi, Detectives McNulty, Moreland, Greggs, and Freeman. That feels wiry to me. We'll look into it. By the way, Dave, Sam is originally from Central Washington, home to the best cheeseburgers in America. He is currently living in Central Texas. Dave hit me up for locations. I guess he wants to give you cheeseburger recommendations. Or maybe he wants you to give him cheeseburger locations.
For Central Texas?
Yeah.
You can start at Whataburger.
Really?
Whataburger's pretty. Have you ever had a Whataburger?
Yeah, I think in Tallahassee or something.
Yeah, I think you have to have them in Texas.
Oh, okay.
Does he have a question, or are we just going to talk about burgers for the rest of the podcast?
My question boils down to whether Michael Thomas has a sophomore slump. Whatever the factors that will play into this season, targets versus loads of tape to help cornerbacks prep for him, etc., why is a sophomore slump not being asked or considered for Michael Thomas?
I think it has to be considered. We've seen it a million times with wide receivers in their second year, especially in a situation where Brandon Cooks is leaving. So that's one big time target that defenses don't have to pay as much attention to. But Ted Ginn is replacing Cooks, and defenses will pay attention. Whatever you think of Ted Ginn, defenses will still pay attention to him. And this is an offense that's been prolific for a long time. I'd have to go back and watch a lot of what Michael Thomas did to see if he did, if he was, you know, if he ran a full route tree, if he didn't make a bunch of unbelievable catches, if he was just, you know, the volume caught up with him and that's why he had big numbers. But I suspect that he may, I know he made some great catches, and I suspect that he's going to be very good in his second season and should be able to come close to the numbers he had last year.
Yeah. Are there, think of a wide receiver that had a sophomore slump. Like, it's happened with running backs, but.
The guy that comes to mind, just because they're both big, they can run, they're physical, is Mike Evans. You know, and if you want to call
it three touchdowns,
right? His catches went up, his yards went up, but his touchdowns dropped dramatically. So, you know, what we were saying about Evans last year was all he has to do is get back to half of the touchdowns that he had from 12, you know, to three, and he's going to be a top, you know, 15 to 10 wide receiver. And clearly he was. So I don't know if Thomas has that type of drop off, but that's the type of thing that I would see. I don't think he's going to necessarily be awful. But if the touchdowns go south in a hurry, then you're going to be frustrated.
Yeah, I don't know. He seems pretty legit to me. Like, Allen Robinson did not have a sophomore slump. Would he have a junior slump?
Yeah.
But if Drew Brees had been his quarterback, it just wouldn't have happened. So.
Right. Okay. That's the thing that's the separating factor is the quarterback and the coach.
Right.
You know, they don't usually have scenarios where guys just dramatically fall off a cliff. You know, I mean, the mediocre talent guys that'll probably happen to, like, you know, Lance Moore, you know, those type of guys. But I don't see that with a talent like Thomas, who, you know, we had the debate of who's the best receiver coming into the draft last year when there were so many good guys, you know, forget about how it played out, but Josh Doctson and Corey Coleman and, you know, Thomas and Sterling Shepard and, you know, whoever else you want to throw into the top echelon of that group. And I don't think we gave Thomas enough credit. You know, maybe Heath was the only one that was really banging the drum, but
he really was. You know, it's true.
Going to the Saints and just playing that role. You know, we thought with Cooks being there and Snead being there and the addition of Kobe Fleener that Thomas was going to get lost a little bit. And clearly he was head and shoulders above everybody
else.
He
proved that he was good enough to warrant a bigger role in that offense than anybody could have seen other than Heath Cummings, who did a great job predicting.
Yeah, but even Heath didn't, you know, away from it. It's not like Heath was saying, I'm taking this guy as a starting fantasy option. He was just taking him as a, you know, late round pick and it paid off, you know, leaps and bounds. But I just don't see a scenario of, you know, Mike Evans dropped off a little bit because Jameis wasn't ready, you know, as a rookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Drew Brees is not going to allow Michael Thomas to have only three touchdowns. That would be a shock of all shocks.
All right, I want to tell you actually, guys, something that Heath said on the baseball podcast today, but we'll save that till the end of the show. So let's read the other emails. Andrew in the Star City, which apparently is Roanoke, Virginia. It's a keeper. It's sort of a keeper league. Keep one of these guys for this year only. Redraft next year. 10-team PPR, lose the round they were drafted. So one guy here, PPR league. AJ Green.
That would be a keeper league.
What'd you say?
It would be a keeper league.
It's a keeper league, but it's not keep forever. It's keep for 1 year. AJ Green in the 13th, in the third round, or any of these guys in the 16th round. Devontae Freeman, Tyrell Williams, Carlos Hyde, Sammy Watkins, Doug Martin, Keenan Allen, or CJ Anderson.
This really isn't a question, is it?
Freeman?
Of course.
Yeah, Freeman in the 16th. That's, man, I wish you could keep more. Let's see. Next email is from Connor. Where's Connor from?
Connor is from Henderson, Nevada.
He's from where?
Henderson, Nevada.
Doodlebugland.
Doodlebugland. Hey, West, Grohl, and Fox with two X's. Are those Daves?
I don't know if I've heard of a Dave Fox, but I have heard of David West and David Grohl.
Okay. On your last episode, you mentioned wide receivers that you did.
It could be Adam, Dave, and Jamie.
Oh, yeah. Adam West, who's Batman,
mm-hmm.
And he's an old kind of character.
I'm the superhero of this group.
Dave Grohl.
You're the rock star.
Another group.
Oh, Dave's the rock star, sure.
And Jamie Foxx.
Coolest guy in the show. Way to go.
Sure.
On your last episode, you mentioned wide receivers that you didn't expect to be productive before they got an opportunity. Just wanted to add another big one to the list, Adam Thielen. What do you think about Adam Thielen this year?
What were we talking about that we didn't mention him?
I think like those late round picks that could be productive if they got the chance.
Because I think we talked about Thielen with what receivers could you take late and take both of them.
All right, well, it doesn't matter. What do you think about Thielen this year? He wants to know why you're so low on Thielen, basically.
I think it's more of just a do-it-again type of thing. You know, he had very similar to J.J. Nelson. He had a very good finish. He played well in a situation where he was needed. There's just so many ifs with that Minnesota team.
Do you buy in?
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings did. They gave him a nice contract extension. So he's going to be on the field a lot. I just feel like we've gotten burned so many times by these Vikings receivers, especially on the outside guys, of, you know, maybe not going back to Percy Harvin, but certainly Charles Johnson and Cordarrelle Patterson, and, you know, you don't want to fall for it again. So hopefully he can, you know, do what he showed in some glimpses over the course of a 16-game season. But he's an excellent late-round pick, you know, as your number four or number five receiver, depending on where he shapes up on your roster.
Yeah, let's just say I don't remember the circumstances surrounding all of these games, but in week five, Thielen had 7 catches, 127 yards, and a touchdown. The next game was week 7 after a bye. He had 2 for 52. In week 14, he had 4 catches for 101 yards. The next week, he had 0 catches on 1 target. The following week, he had 12 catches for 202 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then in week 17, Thielen had 1 catch for 7 yards. So it's tough.
It's just that offense, they're never going to be the Saints, the Cardinals, you know, the teams that are just going to throw it all over the place.
You know who the safest pass catcher is in that offense?
Kyle Rudolph.
But Purple-helmeted Viking.
Stephon Diggs is still going to be, you know, a highly targeted guy. He's entering his third year, you know, so hopefully he takes the next step. We'll see. That team could also be a disaster, you know, if Murray's ankle's not right and they're back to where they were a year ago, if that offensive line with the 2 new tackles doesn't hold up.
Last email's from Philly from Winnipeg. Hey, Kim, Bo, and Slice. I'm sorry to keep reading questions about this. I'm not a narcissist. Just people seem to be interested in it. I think the Azer strategy is a great one. However, the key to using it is identifying the best player / position to use it. After thinking about it, I think the best way to employ this strategy is with teams that have a clear-cut number 2 wide receiver. It works best in this scenario because you aren't spending a ton of draft capital to do it, but there's still upside and assurance. So Philly suggests drafting somebody like Moncrief and Aiken, or Marshall and Shepard. And if there's an injury to one of the two guys, like Beckham or Hilton, then you'll be in good shape. Or there's an injury to Marshall or Moncrief, then you have Aiken and Shepard, you know. I don't know. So he's going lower, like the number 2 and the number 3 receiver on a team, grabbing
sure.
both of
no,
them.
No, I mean, in theory, it makes sense. But, you know, the two examples just popped in my head of how it failed was the Packers 2 years ago with Nelson because Adams got elevated and he didn't do anything. And last year, when Moncrief got hurt, Philip Dorsett didn't do anything. You know, so it's not necessarily a slam dunk like what you typically see when a running back gets hurt, you know, when you talk about the handcuffs. I think, Adam, what you should do, you have now a week to do it. I think you should rank your favorite pair of receivers to do this strategy for.
Okay, that's interesting. I think I should actually define the terms of it, what it actually is.
I would hope at this point people know what the terms are. You're hoping to get 2 receivers, one within the first 4 rounds and one within the second one within the next 3, right? So 2 in the first 7?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Adam, I think the strategy is teams, you want a pair of receivers, but you want to get them at a good value in your fantasy draft.
Yeah.
Whatever that may be.
I want to put it into numbers. Like, one of them has to be outside the top, inside the top 100. One of them has to be outside. I don't know. One of them, they have to both be independently valuable, but have the opportunity to be, like, extremely valuable. I'm not 100% sure. I've honestly been thinking about it on, like, my off time. But, okay, fine. We'll do something concrete about it next week.
I mean, honestly, what you should do, and I know you're going to hate me saying this, but what you should do is write a column on this.
Fine.
And because you're going to put your thoughts down in your notes, it's an interesting thing that people can read about, and certainly our audience is big enough that they would like to probably consume it.
But I have a secret, okay? I haven't told you this. Now's as good a time as any to tell you. I am a terrible writer.
We see your notes.
My notes are just notes. I write a blog every day for fantasy baseball. Like, here's the podcast blog, and here's a link. It's the worst thing on the website, like, by far. I am just a dreadful writer. So I don't know that you want me to write anything.
No, I think you should. If you want, I'll edit it for you. but you can write it, and I'm sure it would be highly consumed because clearly people are interested in this, and we're getting a lot of emails on it.
All right. So here's what Heath said on the podcast this morning, on the Fantasy Baseball podcast. I asked him, I was on the plane on Sunday, and there was a lady. I was like, the example I used was I was in row 20 on the aisle. Dave, please don't yawn. It's so hurtful. Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, you were saying something?
So I'm in row 20 on the aisle, and she's in row 21 on the opposite aisle. Okay, so she's like right behind me, basically, but you know, just a few feet to the left. And she's doing a crossword puzzle, and she asks her husband. Actually, maybe Dave wouldn't even know the answer to this, but she asks her husband, she's like, baseball, blank Desmond, 3-time silver slugger. And she said it like twice, 2 or 3 times. She said it out loud. Do you know the answer, Dave?
Yes.
Okay. See you in Desmond. Do I turn around and help her out, or do I just ignore her?
Can I give you a similar scenario?
Absolutely. That's where this came from.
There was a, on my flight to, from Phoenix to Chicago, it was a red-eye flight, so people, for the most part, were sleeping. But before the plane took off, there were two people talking. They were talking somehow, the owner's meeting came up, and the gentleman talking to the woman was saying that he has a friend who works for an NFL team, and he was out there. He visited him for a little bit, and now he was going home. And they were talking. Somehow they stumbled upon players and somebody who was on Dancing with the Stars. And they mentioned, you know, the guy who did something on Dancing with the Stars, and they were going back and forth about, was it Emmett Smith? Was it Jerry Rice? Whatever it was, I forget who said who. Flight landed. They couldn't figure out who it was. Flight landed. I think the two people fell asleep. As they're walking off the plane, the guy in front of them turns around and said, by the way, you were talking about Hines Ward. So I told him the answer 2 hours later.
Were you the guy who told him?
No, I was just listening.
You just witnessed the whole thing.
Yeah, and he told him. I couldn't think of who they were talking, you know, Dancing with Stars, because I don't know all the athletes that have been on it.
Do you know that Rashad Jennings is on Dancing with Stars?
That's actually what made me think of it, was that Rashad Jennings was on, and I thought maybe that's what they were talking about, because I don't know if the season started yet or not. But he turned around and he said, he just looked at him and go, Hines Ward. And they were, oh, Hines Ward.
Yeah.
You know, so I think after enough time, you could have probably said something.
Yeah, I didn't want to solve her crossword puzzle for her, but Heath said that he goes to sporting events and he hears the idiots, because every time you go to a game, right, or a lot of times you go to a game, there are idiots around you and they're talking about sports and you know so much more than them, because we cover sports and when people who listen to this know sports, and these people are just saying the dumbest things and it drives me crazy. But I usually just keep it all internal and I stew inside and I'm just like, oh, shut up, dude, inside. Heath will correct them. Heath is the guy who turns around and corrects you when you're wrong in the stands. And he thinks that he's a hero to the rest of the section because he's basically getting these people to shut up. So it reminded me of that with the superhero stuff with Adam West. But yeah, I can't do that at a game. Like, I let people say dumb things and I never really correct them, even though I want to.
So it's got to be something that he's correcting them on, something that's factual.
Right.
Or he's offering his opinion.
No, it's factual.
So, like, if it's, you know, two people at a basketball game that's not related to the two players playing are saying Russell Westbrook or James Harden is the MVP of the league, and he just turns around and says, no, it's Russell Westbrook?
No, it wouldn't be that. would be, like,
so
a
fact. It's the Ian Desmond scenario.
Yeah. Let me tell you one of my favorite stories. So, this was 6-7 years ago by now. I'm getting a haircut. I'm waiting to get a haircut. And, oh, what song? Oh, Here I Go Again on My Own, whatever. Here I Go Again. Comes on the radio, and there's like 3 people in the chair getting their hair cut, and there's me and one other guy sitting waiting to get our hair cut, and nobody can remember who sings the song. And the lady in the chair is like, oh, this is Bon Jovi. And I'm just like, are you serious? Bon Jovi does not sing Here I Go Again. But I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to correct them. So the guy next to me, he has this look on his face like, I'm about to save the day. Because they're like, is this Bon Jovi? Is this Bon Jovi? He turns around and goes, this song? Great White. And I was just like, you don't think this is funny? Every time I've told this story, it has gotten a laugh. Every time. It is a great story.
It's kind of hard with Dave snoring to pay attention.
That's not fair. So he's like, oh, this song? Great White. And he totally butchers it. And he finally left the store after getting his hair cut. And I was like, by the way, it's Whitesnake. And they're like, oh, yeah, I knew it wasn't Great White, and I saved the day. That's why I'm Adam West. That's why I'm the superhero. That is a great story, okay? I don't care what you say. We're done. This is Fantasy Football Today. Have a great weekend, White Snake.
Bye. Great White.